Our first guest this hour has such a large body of work, it's hard to know where to begin. We'll start with the basics. Betty LaDuke is an artist, has been for more than half a century, and she taught art to many students. And her affection for students and farm workers is reflected in the recent creation of the Betty LaDuke Cultural and Education Fund for Farm Workers' Children, set up through the Oregon Community Foundation. Betty LaDuke is a painter with a body of work that's been exhibited all over the world, which is appropriate because she's traveled to and drawn inspiration from many parts of the world and the people who live there. She taught art classes at Southern Oregon University for more than three decades until her retirement 20 years ago. Betty LaDuke, thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
My great pleasure.
So I understand you just knew from very young that you'd be an artist. What moved you then?
Crayons and coloring books as a kid in the Bronx, yes. And then gradually I had good teachers. I had wonderful teachers, but not in your regular school system, but in a summer camp that was interracial and co-ed, was in New Jersey. And my teachers were African-American with a body of work that was very special and very connected to community. I learned from them.
I understand the summer camp included the likes of Pete Seeger showing up to play music.
Yeah, Paul Robeson too.
Really? Okay, all
yeah,
kinds of figures
special.
In that time. Wow.
Yeah.
So, and you did go to a high school that allowed you to explore your art?
High School of Music and Art, where one of the we were encouraged to take sketchbooks around the city and to use that material for the watercolor paintings and the other kinds of classroom projects.
How rare was it for someone from your neighborhood in the Bronx to consider life as an artist?
Very, because it wasn't practical, and most young women growing up when I did were either secretaries, maybe a school teacher, but artist? Uh-uh.
Didn't happen.
No.
What moves you to continue creating even now? I mean, what's been the common thread in your work through the years, the real urge to go ahead and create?
I think people. But I've loved people around the world connected with their environment and also rites of passage, what makes us human, what makes us, individuals and part of a family, part of a community, what's the same and what's unique. I think those questions are part of the content of my work that I've been so lucky to be able to explore.
And you've explored so much of the world. I mean, as I tried to look at the list of countries you visited, I quickly lost track. Can you even keep track of the number of countries you've been to?
Kind of, because each country has led to a body of work. And it all came through teaching, so it wasn't like wealth other than teaching and getting grants and the sabbaticals, which gave me the ability to do some travel and research. And then the focus on how people live, what they plant, what they eat. Part of that came from my husband, Peter Westergaard, who is connected with the Southern Oregon Experiment Station, now called Extension and Research. His interest in the pear crop here and integrated pest management. So an awareness of the importance of the work he did plus food and how to do it right.
I hadn't thought about what a great mixed package that was, where you were focused on the workers and their welfare, and he was focused on what they were working with and making sure that that was whole and hearty.
Kind of, but I didn't focus on the Rogue Valley at all till he got very sick and passed, actually. And then I started looking at those pear trees. But before that, I had been invited by Joan Thorndike and Fry Family Farm to come see their flowers, to come see what's right around us. And I could do it. I couldn't travel long distance. I could, travel short. And it just opened me up to the beauty, to the extreme beauty of first it was flowers, organically grown, and such a variety. And then I went from flowers to the people doing the harvesting, doing the planting. That's what interested me. Always that interaction of people and nature.
And so this led to the project, well, a couple of different things. There's the book in front of me now, Bountiful Harvest, from Land to Table, which has your art in it and your writing and the writing of several other people as well. Also led to some fairly large works that are now mounted on the wall at the Medford Airport. Is that right?
How about that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're 26 panels, and they're almost life-size. They're more or less 4 to 5 feet tall, and they're shaped. They're cut in shape, so they're in the position of people doing the work. And at first, it started out with Fry Family Farm and pretty much focused. That series on the walls, these 26 panels at our airport, also has signage that says, Celebrating Local Farms and farm workers. I'm really proud of the airport burn case and the commissioners at that time that allowed all this to happen, and Bill Thorndike that organized it with the Medford Foundation. So a lot of people helped support this project. It became a great community effort, plus 26 people investing in those panels, which was just wonderful. And then it grew from Fry family to the orchards, to the pears and peach harvests, and then to grapes. So I've kind of covered the major agricultural base in Southern Oregon. And at first it was just artwork, bringing my sketchbook out there, sketching the workers and just enjoying what I was witnessing as an artist, and then coming back to the studio and taking those sketches and figuring out how to reshape them, redesign them, enlarge them for these wood panels, which are cut, shaped, and routed, a lot of work. My friend and assistant, Barney Johnson, and neighbor who grew up with my kids, is the one who does that aspect of the hard work.
I should point out, when we talk about the shapes, that if you have an image of somebody who is doing the snipping work on the vines in a vineyard, then the panel is going to take the shape of that worker generally. So it's interesting stuff. A little hard to describe on the radio, but we'll give it another whack when we come back from a break. Betty LaDuke, the artist and creator of this new fund for farm workers' children, will join us again on the Jefferson Exchange on the other side of a break. You can join in as well. Back on the program in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest for this segment is Betty LaDuke, the artist who has been living in the Ashland area for somewhere around 40 years now, by my count. She's been creating over and over through the years, depicting quite often farm workers in other countries. She turned her attention to the Rogue Valley and put together a number of large-scale paintings. We were just talking about them hanging on the wall at the Medford Airport. They're also featured in a new book called Bountiful Harvest, From Land to Table. And Betty has created the Betty LaDuke Cultural and Education Fund for Farm Workers' Children. We'll talk about that in this segment as well. You can join in, 800-838-3760 by phone or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I'm still struck by the artistic process. I don't know if anybody else does quite what you do. And again, the radio can be a tricky place to talk about artwork, but very vibrant colors in your artwork reminds me of things from Latin America or from Africa, and you've traveled to both places. But also the use of the wood, and you were talking about the routing of the wood and all the other work. Why paint on the plywood, for example?
Well, it's hard to say exactly, but it leads to murals, to large areas of wall covering. And it started with my work with Heifer International and doing a huge mural complex for them in Little Rock, Arkansas. But wanting to live in Oregon, I devised a way to cut and shape the images, which were animals mostly for Heifer International, so that they could be grouped into a long line covering like maybe 100 feet. So that got me started in this process, and I continued. I liked the partnership with Barney, but mostly working in the fields and just really enjoying two things: the artist's perspective of watching the movement of the workers, and then second, getting to know them. And that's what led to the book. Getting to know them, they got to know me, to not be afraid of my sketching. I would show them the sketches. I would often give them reproductions of the panels, and got to know them a little bit through maybe 5 years of going back again and again. Not all the workers, because some are just seasonal, part-time, but the ones that are related to different farms, orchards, or vineyards, and all year. So it was a wonderful relationship. And then realizing, too, that many of them economically were really having a tough time in the off-season, and they were residents. They were not transitory, but residents. They were part of the people in our community. And getting to know more about them, I felt like it would be wonderful to do something for their kids. So in conjunction with the Oregon Community Foundation, I decided to establish, to invest, first of all, to invest $5,000, a big chunk, and it takes $25,000 to make that fund active. So I'm busy selling books. How about that? Yeah, how about that? And exhibiting and so on. And my work is going around Oregon. First of all, I want the work to be shared. So it is. It's going to the Grants Pass Art Museum. It was at the Portland Art Museum. Very excited about that. Major exhibit there. It was in the Portland airport for about 6 months. And then it's going to Eastern Oregon, where I've never been, and that's Ontario, to the Four Rivers Community Center, and then to Redding, California, to the Turtle Bay Arboretum. So just delighted that people are caring and wanting to exhibit this work.
You know, it's interesting that we have you here because we have had so many discussions about the interest in where your food comes from the last couple of years, the local food movement. We've had the farm-to-table people, the people from Thrive. I mean, you name it. I mean, all the farm-to-fork and all the different efforts to try to let people know, hey, get to know your local farmers. They're where your food comes from. And then to have you here, and it's been sort of the same process of discovery for you, hasn't it? I mean, you got to know farm workers in lots of other places, but finally turned your focus to the fields around you, in essence.
Right. Other places, I was transitory. I came and went. And here it's difficult, but because of, you know, people like Fry Family Farm, South Stage Cellars, Trium Vineyard, and the Harry and David folks, these are some of the people that where I've gotten to know the growers as well, and their attitude about the workers. That was important to me, that relationship. So that's what the book deals with, too, and that's what got me started. Not so much the agriculture per se, but that relationship, which was special for me and rather unique in the Rogue Valley with some of the folks I've just mentioned who've really done a great job in treating their workers very well.
And it looks like nobody treated you with suspicion. I mean, maybe some of the workers at first, but I mean, you had access to Harry and David's orchards and Meyer orchards. And
no, you don't have access easily.
Oh,
you have
really?
To get permission. Mm. And I was tested on that, and I had to go get the permission. And then after that, you know, there's someone who escorts you around in the bigger orchard. And then after that, they leave you alone. Mm-hmm. But you have to be very respectful of the big equipment and so on. So I can understand that. They were just fine.
Betty LaDuke is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, artist, creator of a book called Bountiful Harvest, From Land to Table. You mentioned getting into the orchards the first couple times that some of the workers were afraid of sketching?
No, not afraid exactly. They were surprised. Camera's much faster. What's the matter? You know? Yeah. And then I began to be asked for, you know, copies of the sketches, which was very sweet because some of them were going back to visit family in Mexico, wanted to take sketches that I had done with them, which was easy for me to provide, especially for our family farm folks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great pleasure to interact. The fact that they cared. And also I took photographs of them with the panels that they had inspired and would give them those photographs. So we have the kale harvest and we have the parsley harvest panels and some of the flower harvest panels with photographs of the workers in the book, Bountiful Harvest.
Is this the same kind of, I mean, you've done the same sort of work in lots of other countries, haven't you?
No.
Really? Observe the agricultural workers?
Yes, but it's not the only focus when I've traveled. I've had to learn a lot about cultural diversity,
mm-hmm.
about different lifestyles. And my focus wasn't so specific, but I think the first time in India, just to see the importance of a tiny hectare of land and the use of oxen for plowing and well, it started actually in Mexico, and I lived in Mexico for 3.5 years, and I was very young. And pulque, the maguey plant, and how that was like the staff of life. And just seeing in a village, you know, the day-to-day routine. So it came early for me. I think I was 20 when I lived in Mexico for 3.5 years, got there on a scholarship and forgot to come home.
And there was a bit of culture shock, I understand, when you returned. I mean, you've been out way into essentially the boonies of Mexico.
Yes.
With the Otomi people I read about.
Yes.
That people who don't even speak Spanish.
Right.
And so you went from this end of the world back to New York City. What was that like?
Difficult. Mm-hmm. I wanted out.
So I love the story that you tell in the book of the chickens you saw in the store window hanging up and your empathy
yes.
for them.
Ah, yes. Lower East Side. Yeah, I had a job at the Grand Street Settlement House and walked from my little place to the Settlement House, and on the way, the butcher shops, the kosher butcher shops with the chickens hanging in the window. And I felt that a lot of the people were immigrants there and trapped. And I felt I didn't want to be trapped in New York, so I worked at not being trapped.
And you met Sun Bear there, your first husband. Where was he from?
Minnesota. My daughter lives there now. White Earth Reservation, Chippewa, mm-hmm. Anishinaabe.
And then so from Minnesota to L.A. and then finally to Ashland. Had you known about Ashland?
Never heard of Ashland.
Because you had lived in Guanajuato, hadn't you?
Yeah, but that was way before, you know, the Guanajuato
No sister city relationship?
No,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Way before. Yeah, no, I got to Mexico in 1953. So Senora Chela didn't initiate that program till about 1965, 66, like that. Mm-hmm. And we both started teaching at SOU at the same time.
Go ahead.
I forgot that.
It was about Guanajuato and the Ashland connection.
Oh, no, that happened.
But Ashland just sort of like came out of the blue for you.
Yeah, I was teaching in East Los Angeles at a junior high. I finished up my education there at in East Los Angeles and Los Angeles State College, now it's a university, and got my master's and wanted out from junior high teaching. I love the kids, but it was tough and demanding, and my daughter was born then, and I had to learn to drive a car. That was the worst part.
As a New Yorker, you can have the luxury of never learning how to drive, right?
Yeah. And when this job came open through one of my professors, he had contact at SOU, that happened. I was hired and stayed, and it became home and a second marriage and a second child and a whole life of more than 50 years, actually, here.
This is a great story of you and Peter Westergaard setting up your first house together in the Ashland area, particularly about the ratio of kitchen to studio. What was that?
Yeah, the house was very simple. We could barely afford it, and it was simply that I would have a choice, large studio, large kitchen, and obviously, you know, and he agreed.
So it ended up being small kitchen,
yeah,
large studio?
It is small, but it does. It works.
Do you still live there?
Yeah.
Same house? Wow.
Yeah, have a great studio.
So you mentioned that the sabbatical is what really gave you a chance to go explore the world. And a big one came up in 1972, and you went to India.
My first one.
By yourself.
Yes. With a book, a guidebook for Fodor's guidebook, India on $5 a Day. And sort of planned a trip based on what I read. I wanted a different kind of cultural experience to share with my students. It seemed I knew nothing about Asia from my own college education, and I was eager to have a new venture. And my husband said, do something challenging. Well, I didn't need to be told twice. So I went for 1 month, and he was very good about childcare and juggling work and so on. And it just turned me around into wanting more. I was thirsty and hungry to share these experiences with students and to use it for my artwork. So it became a way of life. I got my usual sabbaticals every 7 years, but grants in between. So every summer I could go for a month at most. And different world areas. So it was exploring the East, then exploring Africa, then back to Latin America. But there were different reasons to go each time. And I began to be interested in women's art. You know, here I am juggling, you know, and how do other women artists do it in other countries? So in addition to agriculture, that became another focus, tying in with the Vagina Monologues very well.
Indeed. That's why we're in the same hour with you. Betty LaDuke is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the artist based in Ashland. She taught art and more at Southern Oregon University for 32 years before retiring a while back, and has now come out with a book called Bountiful Harvest, From Land to Table, and has created a fund for farm workers' children through the Oregon Community Foundation. Questions and comments, welcome on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. When you look at the art you created before that sabbatical trip to India in 1972, is there a great difference in the before and the after?
Oh, yeah. I think that through travel and exposure to so many diverse cultures, my style of working just opened up, and I began to admire other folk cultures around the world, for example, And the paintings grew from masonite to large canvases. The early work, I'm very proud to say, that was done in Mexico and exhibited in Mexico is now at the Jordan Schnitzer Museum at the University of Oregon. They have quite a collection. And my work is in public collections. That's what I like. In a sense, I'm so proud when it's there and people can see it in their day-to-day life. The airport is one small example, but I love having exhibits in schools like, how about Talent City Hall? Mm-hmm. I had an exhibit there. I loved it, you know. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter. I really enjoy sharing in that way.
And there's an exhibition, too, at the library at Southern Oregon University.
Oh, permanent. I donated work there. Mm-hmm. Yes, I donate a lot of the artwork rather than looking for sales. I'm really happy to donate to public spaces. So, yes.
When I think about the trips that you've made to different parts of the world, I mean, in some cases, you're seeing people whose life circumstances are pretty hard. You know, life can be harsh from day to day. And I wonder about the process of processing for you, the ability to observe what's going on and deal with your own emotions and be able to create artwork, or is dealing with the emotions the artwork itself?
There were many themes, and one of the themes was war and camps for displaced people, and it ties in with the politics right now. Mm-hmm. And I experienced that in Eritrea. The war they had in 1998 to 2000 with Ethiopia, and being there to see the camps of displaced people. And I paint about these things. I also was in Chile, for example, to see the result of a dictator and families, kids and husbands thrown into jail, and the way women coped. So that a lot of my interest has been how politics affects art and affects the artist and affects the community. So that's the kind of research I've done, and I've also written 5 books that express these concerns.
Within this book, Bountiful Harvest, there are some other voices, including Joan Thorndike, who writes of the immigrants who grow our food, and she wants politicians to hear of it. I mean, what do you make of the constant political bickering over immigration in our country?
It's horrific. The ignorance and the lack of knowledge that our country was based on immigrants. But right now, in terms of, let's say, the farm workers, there are about 1 million here. We depend on them totally for harvesting our food all around the country, including the Rogue Valley, including Oregon. And this is like basic to our survival.
Is there more of the work going to go on? Are you pretty much finished with going out to orchards and vineyards, or is that just something that goes on?
I just finished another panel, the carrot harvest. How about that?
Uh-huh.
In the spring, or at the end of the summer of 2015, I delighted in seeing these big orange carrots just pop out of the brown earth and just love the guys who are harvesting them. So that's going on, as well as scenes that deal with the, I call it border crossing. Things. So I'm dealing with the duality, sometimes very happy, delightful, as well as the opposite.
I'm curious to know, because, you know, there are people who observe and people who do. I mean, given all the farm work you've observed, do you maintain a garden yourself? Do you make much
of it? I live in a very shady area and have deck plants. That's as good as it gets. Otherwise, there are a lot of pine trees and it's not a garden area.
So tell us about this fund. Again, it's the Betty LaDuke Cultural and Education Fund for Farm Workers' Children. You mentioned your own $5,000 in there. Has it reached the $25,000 level where it becomes
Not
active?
Not yet. All my royalties go into that fund. So the more the book sells, the more it will fill. And I think also White Cloud Press is going to donate some funds. And also, when I receive honorariums for the exhibits that I'm now hosting in various places, those funds will go in there. So I can build slowly to the best of my ability, but I need other folks to donate. And I will not control that fund. It'll be controlled, I feel, by people of the Hispanic community who know the needs, who can judge. I don't want to be the controlling force at all.
Do you have some ideas about how you'd like it used?
No, the Oregon Community Foundation has their way of setting things up and cooperating with the donors. So I'm sure it'll be well done, and possibly the Northwest Seasonal Workers will have a hand. Who knows? I don't know. But I think it's important that we give those kids opportunities, not just for education, but if they want to play instruments, if they want to create a group that will paint community murals, things of that sort that I can't even foresee. It would be so nice to give them those opportunities. That's how I thrived. That's how I grew. I had scholarships. I know all about that. So it's a way of giving back.
It is called the Betty LeDuc Cultural and Education Fund for Farm Workers' Children, established the Oregon Community Foundation at OregonCF.org. I'm going to make sure I got that right. OregonCF.org. The book is Bountiful Harvest, From Land to Table. Betty LeDuc, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. Very good to have you.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure.